So you think you got what it takes? You think you can record a podcast? If you dreamt of the glamour and glitz of being a podcaster, well, then you need to check out the Anchor app. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you think you got what it takes, then you need to go to anchor.fm/start and get started today.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain,
Ricky Ricardo.
All right, everybody, welcome to a brand new edition of the Swift Kicks podcast. At the end of the last podcast, I told you to keep listening to our trash takes. Well, those trash takes have now made us the top sports betting podcast in the world. Ben took a wild shot, put some money on our three upsets of the next 2 weeks, won a pretty good chunk of change. Crystal Palace ended up drawing Tottenham, Everton beat Chelsea, and Burnley beat Arsenal. Ben, how do you feel about that?
I'm feeling pretty good. You know, a tenner bet that came in and over a grand on a three-game parlay. It's safe to say that I'm now the world's biggest Burnley fan, that's for sure. I remember the last 10 minutes of that game, I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't think it was going to happen, and then that red card came out against Arsenal. And I just, that was all she wrote, my man.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there to see it, because when you're given the live text updates, I didn't understand the gravity of the situation. But now I did. I wish I could have seen you up and just animated watching the end of that game.
So the irony is I was also putting together a bunch of baby furniture because, you know, I am expecting my first child over here, dad of the year. And as I'm doing it, I'm like half putting stuff together, staring at the TV like, oh, no. Oh, no, Arsenal. Mikel Arteta, I am banking on you being absolutely trash. We cannot have this pull through. And poor Chelsea's sitting there just like, I don't think this is that big of a deal. And I explain it to her.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, Burnley it is. And I'm pretty sure the last like 10 minutes, Burnley's keeper saved two worldies. And I was just like, that's it. I'm a Burnley fan. That's the way we're going moving forward.
Did you know how much you were going to win before you won it?
No, man. I didn't want that money spent before I got it. So the reality of it is we were really able to hang in there. We made it work, and to all you doubters out there that were sitting there saying, we don't believe in your trash takes, joke's on you. The other piece to it as well is directly after that, someone picked us up on Twitter, asked us for some advice on that day, and the advice I gave them came out to be completely false. So sorry to that guy, and tune in for more trash takes at the end of this episode. We will have
a couple. We win when we want to.
Right. In fairness, he should listen the first time around. I might have told him who was actually going to win. But it's been an interesting couple of weeks of football, and it's going to continue to be a great Christmas break. But, hey, at the end of this, again, today, we'll be talking about our picks, and we'll pick our three trash takes, and we'll go from there.
Exactly. And we'll see if we can do a repeat.
Yeah, Steve, I'm just going to say, so let's move on from trash takes, hopefully, and get into some good takes here. What are you seeing at the top of the Premier League right now? You know, got Liverpool, Leicester City, and Man United have stuck into the top three. Where do you see that playing out?
It's interesting. United are doing better than I anticipated. I think with all the negative media press, I think everyone's just kind of waiting or expecting United to maybe capitulate or just more headlines about OGS, you know, things going wrong. And when you actually look at the table and look at how close they are off the top, it's not all frowns and rain over there. I mean, it's looking okay. I think it's going to be still, I mean, it's not halfway, but it's about halfway through the festive period. So they still have a lot more fixtures to go through. A lot of injuries can happen in a short amount of time. A lot of points can be exchanged here. So I think the top four, top five is looking about how I expected it to look at this point. But this could change quite a bit in a short amount of time. I'm just happy that Leicester are still holding it.
Yeah. Ben, you were talking in the last podcast, you know, talking about how Tottenham, they should not have been top of the table where they were. You're looking now, they've had a little bit of a poor run of form and they're back down to sixth place. Do you think they'll slide even more?
Yeah, I think Tottenham are probably right around where they'll finish the year, to be honest. I think they could see a slight, you know, run at fifth place, sixth place, seventh place. They'll be right around there. They're just outside of that Europe zone. I think what we're seeing is a classic Jose Mourinho meltdown where he loses a couple, blames it on everything but himself, says they were the better team when they lost. And in reality, you know, without Gareth Bale on the side, they've looked poor. He was out in that one-all draw against Crystal Palace, and it's just too much pressure on Son. And I don't think Harry Kane's a strong enough striker to be really carrying the team. And it is really Son's show. And Gareth Bale adds that element of without Gareth Bale, you can focus on Son. The minute Gareth Bale is in the game, you then have to turn your focus to one of the two, not both. And I think it really suits them. But that being said, with him out, and Jose Mourinho is just an absolute disaster in the press, I do think they're taking a tumble. I think another team that's going to be kind of interesting to see, I think they're actually in the right place right now, and this might be an unpopular opinion, but I think Man City in eighth makes total sense to me. I think Man City's form this year is at best a top of the middle of the table, if you will. Man City's form is sitting right where I think it should be. My question for you, Alex and Steve, is really, are Man United actually title contenders? They've got a game in hand putting them, if they win that game in hand, that puts them like right on the heels of Liverpool. What do you guys think?
They got a big game coming up against Leicester here this weekend. I think that'll really tell you where they are, and it'll be an interesting sort of game to gauge which team is going to be title or challenging for the title with Liverpool, I think. I think if Leicester City loses, that sort of gives them a dent. They're always going to be thinking in the back of their mind, like, okay, we lost that game to Man United. They are now, they still have a game in hand against Leicester City. You know, everything would be going for Man United at that point. And if they pull ahead in that Christmas season, it's a hard place to get out of to think, okay, listen, we got a long slog ahead of us. We got, you know, a couple things to work through to try and even get back to the point of being in second place. Whereas I think if Man United win that game, they have all the momentum going forward for them. And they've been in a pretty strong run of form. I mean, literally the last time we were talking, they were, you know, mid-table-ish. And to really pull up into Champions League spots and to be even in this discussion about a championship contending team, I think is a lot of credit, I guess, to Solskjaer. Would you put it down to them, Steve?
Yeah, I think to address Ben's initial question, are United title contenders? I think that's ambitious, but I don't think it's far off. With how tight everything has been, there's not been a clear, they're running away with it. Liverpool are starting to maybe touch into that. The gap within the top four, top five has always been within a couple of points. Liverpool now are sitting at 31 points and Leicester City at second are at 27 points. So there's a 4-point gap. United do have a game still to play, and at 26 points, that could take them to 29. So again, that would just tighten it right back up. But I do think that they will finish top four. I also think Tottenham will finish top four. So to contrary to Ben's prediction, I do think that Tottenham have what it takes to finish top four. Where in that top four, I'm not too sure. I'm not confident enough to say, but I think that they'll be up there. Is OGS the one to carry them? I do think so. I remember Ben making the solid point last week last episode about it, about OGS being the one for United. And I back that. I do back that. I think the tide is starting to turn at United, which is refreshing to see. They're not hitting the panic button. And even when fans may be asking for it, or the public is asking for it, or pundits are asking for it, whatever, it's refreshing to see that they're sticking to them. They're sticking to the plan and they're riding out the storm, and not just riding it out, but also, you know, they're performing.
They're seeing the return on it, right?
Yeah.
A little bit of patience goes real far. Awesome, they did crash out of Europe in kind of an embarrassing style, to be fair. they did have a good start and they hit disaster. I don't think United are going to win the Premier League. I don't think they will be. I think they'll be fighting for like a second or third spot, like to be perfectly honest. I think the one thing I do want to address, though, is there's a lot of people who are continuing to say Solskjaer is not the answer. And I think it is important to recognize that patience really is key. And the reason I think United are in better shape now than ever before is the past couple of years, United would put on stellar performances against Man City, your Chelsea's, your Leicester's, your top table teams. And you'd be like, oh, we still got it. We should be in this conversation. And then they'd go up against a lower level team, like a bottom half of the team, like, Crystal Palace, for instance. And they'd slip up, they'd draw, they'd lose. And then watching what they did to Leeds over the weekend really kind of instilled a little bit of trust in me, at least. It was nice to see them put a real hurting on a team. Because usually those are the games that they're those trap games usually get Man United in recent years. And that's where I think the patience and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is paying off. You know where I don't think patience is gonna really thrive is Arsenal. I think Mikel Arteta is out. I think the fans want him gone. I think he's lost the locker room, like Steve was saying. He pretty much cut Ozil, like you were referencing a couple of weeks ago, Steve. And I think the reality is Arsenal have absolutely lost the plot. They are, as someone on Instagram the other day was having a meltdown, they're only a couple points away from relegation zone. When was the last time you saw Arsenal in that position? I don't think ever. But, you know, it's wild is with this year in the way the schedule is kind of compact, Tottenham went from first place to sixth place in like a period of 5 days. That's insane. And it's not like it's the first couple weeks of the season. You know what I mean? We're pretty far out into the season where that kind of slip is pretty big. And I think we're going to see a couple more shifts in this next couple weeks. If you can make it into January or out of January in the top four, you're in good shape. So if Man U can stay on Liverpool's heels coming out of January, I think that'll shift my kind of opinion. If they're within
injury list,
right? If they're in a striking distance coming out of January, I think you'll have a title race, no matter who it is. I'm hopeful it's Man United. Alex, are there any surprises in the league outside of the big teams?
I guess what I wanted to bring up, and I'll point this towards Steve as well. You know, this goes towards our surprises we've had just of the entire season. You know, Man City, your Arsenals, Chelsea, even in a sense, you know, fairly prolific over the past couple of years. And now they seem to have languished. They don't really have the goal scorers that they were known for. How much is that playing into Man United's rise? As well as this is actually pretty interesting to me, is that Man United have had to come back from every single game that they are playing away. You know, does that point to some sort of resiliency? You were talking about Solskjaer, you know, being the manager, and Ben was a little bit as well. You know, is that something, you know, he takes from his past? Like he's seen, you know, the teams of Sir Alex being able to make that comeback and what that means to the city, to the fans, even if they're not there. You know, what does that instill into them?
And it's something I wanted to address. It's actually funny that you brought that back up. I wanted to address this to Ben's point with United's building success, is that as well as being patient, and I was actually talking to a pal of mine over the weekend about this, was that in addition to being patient, United fans have been used to an extraordinary manager in Sir Alex, and are used to now extraordinary results being ordinary. So when those results are no longer happening, you know, David Moyes, leaving now, and now we're on OGS, when those extraordinary, you know, used to them being ordinary events or results are no longer happening, everyone just loses their minds. But I think part of this rebuilding process is not necessarily forgetting all your past, but forgetting your past. You had something that was outside the norm. That was awesome. That was a great time. That's past us. We're now back to normal. How can we build this normal and make it maybe a different kind of extraordinary? I'm not saying that OGS is going to be extraordinary, but expecting him to fill those shoes is just something that it's not real.
So Steve, are you saying that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the standards are not high from him, or that more so along the lines of United have grieved?
I'm saying more so that people holding OGS to the same standards as Sir Alex, like Sir Alex in the domestic and European dominance that he had over so many years, expecting every manager to pick up right where he left off is not realistic. And having that grace period, having this patience for someone to kind of grow into the position and make it their own, that's not going to be exactly the same type of way that they ran it as Sir Alex, but give them time enough to make the position their own in their own way, in their own manner, and then take the club to success again. But it's a different kind of success. I mean, yeah, the results and all that, but like, they're not going to win games exactly like you know, like the old Sir Alex or the old United way.
I think they are, though. I think that's what we're seeing, is I think you're actually seeing more of Alex Ferguson in this squad.
I'm sure there's influences, right? Sure.
You're talking about a team that has learned to come from behind. This was a team where a year ago, 2 years ago, man, you were 1-0 down to anyone. They're throwing in the towel, right? Like, a safe bet right now is Man United 1-0 down at halftime to come in and win. And I think, to your point, that there's a period of time that has allowed for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to have his own like look to it. But I do think it's because the Alex Ferguson formula is in that locker room. He's still in the picture. He's still very heavily involved. You know what's crazy? That was 7 years ago. Alex Ferguson has been gone for 7 years, and we're still looking at the wake of him and being like, is this the next Alex Ferguson? And I think that's
the way it should be. It shouldn't be like that. Is that the next person? They're like, no, this is the OGS, like taking us to OGS ways, not back to Sir Alex ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Where's your head at, Alex?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think once you have somebody that's such a figure like that, it's going to inevitably be just so hard to replace them. But I think what Steve is saying is that it's
impossible to replace Sir Alex. I think
you should not be replacing them. You should have moved on. And I think that in the early stages for Manchester United, they tried to replace Sir Alex. And in a sense, they may even still try to be replacing Sir Alex. I mean, they have one of his, basically his understudies, you know, they have Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in there. But I think at the same time, you have to imagine that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is wildly different in a locker room or on the training pitch than Sir Alex was, you know, not nearly as hard on the players, or, you know, he's not giving them the old hair dryer or anything like that. He's the player's coach. And I think that has probably taken a lot of people a lot of time to get used to. You know, it was fun at the beginning. I mean, I remember when OGS came in and he was, you know, the king, the Messiah. He had come in and they started winning again and it was good. But then inevitably you have to build a system. You have to build that around the coach. You have to build that around the players the coach wants. And I truly think that you are sort of coming into a point now where you're seeing the fruits of that labor. And if it continues the way it's been continuing, then you will return to where the fans want them to be. You'll return to Champions League winning football. I mean, this season didn't work out, but you know, one step at a time, you'll get back into the cup games. You'll get back into contending for championships, you know, things like that. So I think that they've definitely, I think Ben, you said it best, you know, they've had their grieving period almost. They've, you know, they've had a couple of rebounds afterwards, you know, they've tried figuring it out, and maybe this is the one that works out for them. And again, maybe it's not. Maybe, you know, OGS builds something and then hands it over to a more polished manager, so to speak. And I think that's really what you're seeing over at Arsenal is, I mean, Arsene Wenger left in 2018, so 2 years ago, and they haven't been able to figure it out since. Mikel Arteta, you know, just absolutely down in the dumps right now. But I think that he's somebody that's very good at driving his own media narrative. I mean, he's saying, I'm not in the state of mind to be quitting right now. You know, I'm looking forward to the next two transfer seasons. So he's really looking ahead to the future. And, you know, Arsenal has been a team that's really, you know, put faith in their managers and is building a system. So, you know, they just may be in a rebuilding season or two and have to work on that. But, you know, we live in a day and age where, you know, Jose Mourinho can come in for 6 months, make your team feel good, and then drop off after that. And I think that the fans, some fans at least, look for that in whatever team it may be.
I think Jose Mourinho brings a quick cash surplus from short-term victories, right? He'll get you some hardware. He'll make you relevant. He might make you more attractive to a longer-term solution. But ultimately, every club Jose Mourinho touches has a couple of years of just shambles. I think that's important to recognize too. I think, you know, Arsenal are in a similar place as United were a couple of years ago. I just think that the gravity of games being so close together right now is so great that you can't afford to have a couple of weeks of bad form. A couple of weeks of bad form right now just sends you straight down the table. It's pretty rapid. I do think the table looks like it normally should, with the exception of really Arsenal. I think Chelsea are going to be contenders. I think we're going to see a good, strong second half of the season from Chelsea. Yeah,
I think so too.
They're just kind of figuring their game out. Steve, last episode, you highlighted Everton and saying Everton's going to be coming into a strong form. Strong form coming through this period of time is really could change the season for you. But team
for sure.
Teams like Man United, I think Man U, you're going to see them kind of restructure the way. When you can beat teams that are lower than you in the table, those top tier teams, you're playing for a draw. You're playing safety on the road, and you're able to be a little bit more strategic. So it's exciting as a Man United fan to see. I do think Man City are going to get creative in the transfer market. And I think that's going to really help either bring a resurgence to the second half of the season for Man City, or it's going to keep them right where they are. And just kind of going through the bottom of the table, Fulham always seem to get themselves out of that danger zone.
Are
still in it, but they've figured a way to get out of there again. Those bottom three teams right now, Fulham, West Bromwich Albion, and Sheffield United. We could see those.
West Brom's already hit the panic button. They brought in Big Sam. They brought in the guy to get him. the boards made a decision. Is it Big Sam time? Yeah, call him in.
Got him on speed dial.
It's December. I know. Get him in here. They sacked Slaven Bilic over, I think it was over the weekend or the last few days. And Big Sam is in. Let's see if he does. I don't know how Big Sam feels. Like when clubs call him, he has this like unspoken like job, that this role that he fulfills. He's like, I'm the guy that gets people out of the garbage.
He's like Bar Rescue, but for football teams.
Oh. Yeah.
Newcastle once called on Sam Allardyce. Oh.
So, Alex, I was going to ask, is this the year? Like, is this – it's a bad relationship, Newcastle in the Premier League. Yeah. Is this the year that we both move on, us being the Premiership and you being the spokesperson for Newcastle United?
No, never, never. Black and white till I die, right? I mean, at least we're better than Sunderland.
Most frustrating side. Are you, though?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Sunderland has a nice, you know, Netflix series, but, you know, at least Newcastle's in the Premier League.
For now,
I don't know what to do.
Hammered by Leeds.
Yeah, we got hammered by Leeds. Right. We have a final, you know, like it's not like a true Northeast derby, but it's a pretty good Northern derby. And, you know, the first time that they're back in the Premier League, and, you know, we should be showing them that, like, no, we've been here a while, we're better. And we didn't. So, I mean, how we're sitting up in 12th place right now, you know, ahead of Leeds, game in hand, all that kind of stuff, it kind of boggles the mind, to be honest.
Dude, the last time that Leeds played Newcastle, Alan Shearer was starting.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? You got Shaka Hislop in goal, both sports pundits now.
Do you have the result up there in front of you?
No idea.
Oh, I thought you – oh, okay.
Come on now. We don't fact check till later, and then I have to go back and the whole thing. It was – you know who's back? We brought him up, and he came to the rescue for Brighton, Hove and Albion. Danny World-Class Welbeck coming
93
in
goals now.
Yep, coming in clutch in the 87th minute to ruin Sheffield United's only chance of a win this year.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
To be fair, Sheffield was wearing pink uniforms, so deserved loss.
And they were down to 10 men since the 40th minute. Like,
yeah.
So it's just – poor form there. Steve, what's going on in the wonderful world of Scotland.
Records are being broken. Over the weekend, Celtic won the Scottish Cup, beating Hearts in penalties. I don't think it should have went to penalties, but they beat them in penalties over the weekend. And they have won what's known as the quadruple treble. So they have won they have won all three domestic titles, the Scottish Cup, the League Cup, and the league. They have won that back to back to back to back. So three domestic titles over 4 years. They have won 12 domestic titles. And no other team has ever done that in four consecutive years, won all three domestic titles. So that's truly something that I think should not be slept on. As much turmoil is going on in the green half of Glasgow, I think that for that to it says a lot. And I hope that Celtic can now turn around and use that as a bit of confidence to really get some, regain some form back in the league. A funny thing is too, is that in terms of domestic trebles, Celtic has now won the domestic treble 9 separate times, 4 times within the past 4 years, but 9 times in total. And there's one other team in the entire world who has also won it 9 times. And I won't even mention them. We won't mention them on this podcast. But they're in the blue half of Glasgow.
Come on, Stevie G.
Rangers. And they're going to stay at 9. They're going to stay at 9. But Rangers and Celtic are both sitting at 9. They're tied at 9 with the most domestic troubles in world football, in club football around the world, which is crazy.
I've been meaning to ask you this. Are you somewhat excited about Steven Gerrard and the Rangers form? Like, truly, like, is there something nice about seeing another club in Scotland compete?
Nice is a strange way to put it, because the fear that I have and seeing them get results and smashing teams that we're losing to or drawing against, I wouldn't say that's nice, but it is, from a competitive standpoint, good to see that Celtic have to be on their toes, that they can't waltz through every season and expect to win a treble or even the league. Rangers just coming out the gates, guns blazing, and haven't stopped since is both scary, but it also, I think it adds to the pedigree of Scottish football. It shows it's not just a,
you need the competition, right?
Right. You can't be smashing teams and then at the end of the season, you're 25 points clear of second place. You can't. I mean, you can say that, then people look at the table. It's like, oh, sick. Well, you're competing against who else?
Right.
So having that show up, yeah, that is nice. I do think, I mean, Hibernian, I think Aberdeen, I think some of these other teams, although maybe not title contenders, Duke, you have to be wary when you're playing against them, but yeah, Rangers and I don't know if it's Steven Gerrard effect or if it's, you have to think so. I mean, anyway.
The man's Rangers, special.
He's something. I don't know what he is, but he's something. And he can stop anytime now.
Just a quick update. Albion Rovers have a big match this weekend against Queen's Park. They're currently down in 9th out of 10 of the Scottish League 2.
Have they contacted us?
No. They're still waiting on our investment money to come through. So everybody, if you want to donate to us, just do that. Just give us your money.
We were waiting on that bet to clear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We got a couple more that need to go through before we can really make a final offer. But yeah, we're feeling confident about being able to take them up to at least League One. So Steve, you didn't point out that Celtic are 16 points behind Rangers right now on the table.
Yeah, I did that on purpose. Why did you bring it up?
Just because. And what about the fact that in your, quadruple treble, three players, Tom Rogic, Scott Brown, and Callum McGregor, they're the only ones to have featured in all 8 of those cup finals or finals of the season.
Yeah.
Is that something to say? Do you guys have like a strong team depth, or has there been a lot of changes going on?
Well, we've had Brendan Rodgers for a good part of that. I mean, Brendan Rodgers is a class manager. That was very refreshing to see, because you could see that the board was actually wanting to make a push towards history. With Brendan Rodgers, he completely just brought a calmness, a very professional, he just brought us to another level. So a lot of that was under Brendan Rodgers. Although faces come and go, Brendan Rodgers was there, I believe, for three of those four. Neil Lennon, who actually I think Brendan Rodgers had replaced, if I'm correct in my timeline. Neil Lennon had been a manager, had been a player before, had won titles with Celtic before. I can't recall those off the top of my head right now, but he had won titles with Celtic before, had been manager for a bit, and has come back as manager. As a fan, it's not really nice to see Celtic going back to, you know, not looking in a new direction, just going back to what we've had before. It just kind of shows a lack of direction. But the quadruple treble is nice. But I think another consistency in that time period is Scott Brown. I mean, Scott Brown is, in terms of leaders that you want on the pitch, I would find you hard pressed to find somebody who fits that more than Scott Brown. Scott Brown may not be the best player on the pitch. He might, depending on who you're playing, might be a liability in just his play style and how he fits in. But what he brings, what he lacks in playing ability, because his legs are going, he's 34, 35 now, what he brings to the game in leadership and leading by example is unparalleled. I don't know a better cap. I'm hard pressed to find another captain better than Scott Brown in all. He's like a Roy Keane a bit. He's a bit like Roy Keane, a little bit less, but I think he's an exceptional captain. And I think that he's a big part of the success that you see in that Celtic side.
I think he fits a Tony Adams at Arsenal kind of deal. You know, just very kind of hardo. But you know,
yeah. He winds up the
wise old man.
Nice old man.
He's always in short sleeve shirts and he's wearing like the. I swear, the kit man. He requests these. What size shorts do our shorts come in? They come in small through extra large. Cool. Get me an extra small. He wears the smallest shorts possible, but he's just, and it doesn't matter how cold it is, no gloves, no long sleeve shirts, no training tops in training. He's just hard as nails, that guy. And I love him.
Yeah.
So he's a ladies' man.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Yeah, I got absolutely rinsed last time for my lack of knowledge on Danny World-Class Welbeck. So I just want to refute myself and just give you guys a quick overview of Brighton's weather for the next 10 days because of sunny Brighton. They have an average weather high of 43 degrees almost every single day in the 10 days. And then all but one day it is raining. So for those of you looking to holiday to Brighton, please do not. For the love of God, don't go to sunny Brighton.
Just a periodic poor weather pattern. It's usually...
It's unusual for this time of year.
Yeah, it's unusual.
This segment brought to you by weather.com. Ben, I was going to fact check you on the last time Newcastle United played Leeds United. And we're going to say in the Premier League because they did play in the Championship, but that doesn't count. So it was 7th of January, 2004. We'll take a little trip down memory lane here. Alan Shearer scored in the fourth minute for a 1-0 win over Leeds United. At the time, Newcastle was in sixth place in the Premiership, and Leeds was in 19th. Starting forward for Leeds, Mark Viduka. Remember that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah. Starting for Newcastle, Alan Shearer. Kieran Dyer, Jermaine Genus, Gary Speed, rest in peace, Nobby Solano, Jonathan Woodgate, never turned out to be anything. Titus Bramble, never turned out to be anything. In goal, Shea Given, Irish wonder.
Lad. So, I was wrong there. I was wrong on the keeper. It's pretty close. Just saying, 1-0 in the fourth minute is such a boring game.
Yes, it is.
Like, that sounds like terrible football.
Yeah.
All right. Going back to the Premier League this year, today, present day, looking at the trash takes coming up. The three upsets this week. Alex, you got to pick one.
West Brom and Liverpool tying.
Let me see. Wolves. Yeah, Wolves winning against Tottenham.
I think Leicester are going to take Man U.
Yeah, same.
I think it's going to be 2-1 Leicester.
I wasn't considering that an upset.
It's hard to hear you from the Scottish Premier League where it's like 12 teams all playing each other in every tournament. I love it. So Scuba Steve, Alex, looking up the fresh conversation of the week, if you will. We talked about our five-a-side squads, which saw me having Johnny Evans playing for some reason. This week, I want to know, you get one right back from all time. Who are you taking?
Cafu from Brazil.
I'm letting that question marinate for a little second. Sergio Ramos played right back for a bit before he transitioned to center back. Yeah, Cafu's a good shout, though.
Yeah, I don't think you could beat Cafu.
I think like in every World 11.
There's a couple of other good names you guys gave. That's fine. Zanetti.
I think I'm a little frustrated, Alex, because that was why I brought this up, because I wanted to be the guy that said Cafu. But now that I can't be that guy, I'm going to go with Zambrada. I think Zambrada is a pretty good name drop right there, too, for a right back. World-class player for Italy, actually a world-class player, but he is no Cafu. I think I take Cafu every time. Cafu was also one of those players that if you ever played against, he just looked terrifying. Unreal speed, big guy, didn't mess it up.
Philip Lahm's a good one.
Zanetti. Phil Neville. I was going to broke you.
Gary Neville, though. Gary Neville.
I know.
No. Dani Alves during that Barcelona stint, that was, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Cafu's a good one. I'm probably going to stick with.
Philip Lahm. The most modern era. Philip Lahm has definitely been probably the best right back. So talking about best players, Robert Lewandowski won FIFA's best male player the other day. Talk about a guy that's sort of come up from nothing. I mean, he was like sort of swimming around the lower leagues of Poland for the longest time before he was picked up. I think at one time he was making like $300 a month playing, just for the love of the game kind of deal. And now he's beating out Messi and Ronaldo. So, I mean, Ben, is this the last time we ever see Messi or Ronaldo like in contention for any of these kinds of awards?
So I think that's a good topic. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I think Messi and Ronaldo being in the conversation for the Ballon d'Or is really is down to one thing. If Messi moves to a different league, no matter where he goes, it will bring up the conversation for both Ronaldo and Messi. You don't have the conversation with one without the other. But I do think if Messi stays in Barcelona, that era is going to kind of fade into the sunset, which is kind of a sad thing to do to see. But really, I think it's probably time, right? And Lewandowski has done some great things. I think to steal one of Steve's saying, people sleep on Lewandowski, right? Like Poland were actually pretty interested in the last World Cup. They do stick around, but it is because of his form and how good he really is. He's also doing big things for Bayern Munich.
He's consistent.
Yeah, it makes sense. Absolutely. I do think, it's worth noting, like, you can't have the conversation about the Ballon d'Or without Ronaldo and Messi. So it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of sparks that. And there might be another, new era of player coming through to kind of start to take that. What do you guys think?
You're asking what players do we think will be taking, replacing those in the conversation?
What's that next wave?
Probably Mbappe. I mean, Mbappe, maybe Haaland. I mean, he gets a lot of press, Haaland. I don't know a whole lot about Haaland, to be honest. I mean, you see him in social media platforms, everyone's pushing him and all this, but personally, I don't know much about his numbers, about what like he's produced. João Felix is another one that gets pushed pretty hard. I think he's starting to fit in at Atletico. If he can keep that up and keep progressing and keep being consistent, I think he could potentially be another one. Alex, you?
How about Weston McKennie? What do you guys think of that? As an American player.
I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love that, but bought like FIFA's best, I think we're still a ways off from that.
Why do you think he's in the conversation?
I think that he's in the conversation because he's put himself in a highly competitive team environment at such an early age, and he's already producing for them. I think that is only ever going to attract money, sponsorships, future deals with different clubs. You know, Italy, you know, it's not what it once was, but it's definitely still a pretty, pretty physical league. We'll put it that way. It's a good league to definitely get your feet wet and figure out where you want to go next. I mean, I don't know what I don't think he's really made any sort of, statements about aspirations or, you know, favorite teams he's ever had as a kid kind of deal. But he's definitely just producing right now. And I think that that is only going to serve him better in the future. And he's going to have a couple of people that he's going to be compared to, you know, Pulisic over at Chelsea, that kind of deal. So he's going to have to learn how to build himself up as well. I think all of that will just help him. I mean, we have Dembele, you know, French forward.
No, Dembele's been a flop for Barcelona.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I mean, he's just been injured all the time. For how much money they paid for him versus how much they've gotten out of Dembele at Barcelona, I think that is it's been a bad deal overall. They can look back at that. At this point in time, they look back and be like, man, we paid this much money for him, and he has played only these many games.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
I think they wouldn't have done it.
An English player, Marcus Rashford, I think that kid's got a lot going for him. I mean, even if it's only – I mean, he's already building such a big off-the-pitch presence right now that, you know, that's sort of the stuff that David Beckham would kind of do. But David Beckham would do it because it paid him money.
Right.
I think Rashford's doing it because, you know, he's a good guy.
He's a true grassroots professional. Yeah. He is so refreshing to see in professional sports. I think, to your point, though, McKennie is it a great squad to be young at? Like, there's no pressure on him with the likes of, you know, Ronaldo in the locker room. Like, the people he's going to be networking with and working with to help develop his game is truly going to set him aside. And I think it's super exciting to see what these guys bring to the U.S. soccer. I do think that U.S. soccer's administration will screw it up. I don't think they will take good care of people like McKennie and Pulisic.
I agree with that 100%.
It's a shame, but they don't typically reward players for playing overseas. They'll put pressure on him to come back to the MLS to try and make a league a money grab, and it's just not the right thing to do. The guys are doing big things. I think the thing I like the most about McKennie is he is truly a box-to-box midfielder who plays well. He's a good size for his position, and he is very disciplined in his play as well. I think if United – to jump around a little bit, if United are truly in form and they are sticking around, I think you could see Rashford get that conversation. But if Liverpool can start making waves in Europe, I think you'll see our boy Mo Salah kind of maybe take some much deserved hardware. I think he's of that right caliber
as
well.
For men's best?
No, for Ballon d'Or for next year. The next wave, if you will. Yeah. To be winning hardware is the two greats kind of fading the best. I read a lot of cool stuff about Ronaldo talking about the relationship with Messi. That's been pretty interesting. He doesn't see them as like the competitors, and it kind of caught me off guard. I would have thought Ronaldo's ego would have been like all about digging into that. But as Juventus went to the new camp in the Champions League, coming out of it, you know, or going into the stadium, you know, Ronaldo's booed, they chant Messi at him. And then when he leaves, you know, he's got nothing but a class act saying like, I've got tremendous amounts of respect for Messi. He's a great player. I don't see him as anyone but to get better from. And I think it's cool seeing that kind of come into fruition. I do think this January's transfer market has some big, big moves coming. And I think that'll be exciting to see. But real quick, while we're talking about Juventus, did anyone see Dybala missed that sitter the other day? It is worth looking up.
Wait, Dybala or you mean Morata?
Maybe Morata. I thought it was Dybala.
Morata with that back heel?
Yes. Morata. Yeah,
that was Morata. That was Morata.
Yeah, Morata absolutely.
I did see that.
Hashtag fact check, Ben.
There you go. That's 2020. That was the worst sitter of all time to miss. And if there was like anyone you would rather miss in front of, you know what I mean? Like you just choked in front of the world's best player. Like you had a moment and you tried to do something special, you idiot. It was pretty funny though.
It was, yeah, it was bad. It was getting a lot of comparisons. Do you remember that Man City game where they played in the, I forget what the occasion was, but they're playing in the MLS and Mario Balotelli was during when time when Mario Balotelli was playing and he did that cheeky back heel against, I think it was like Salt Lake, Real Salt Lake. And he got subbed off at halftime by Roberto Mancini just because he attempted to do that. It was getting a lot of side-by-side comparisons of that on Twitter and it was really funny.
Yeah.
Balotelli kind of faded into the night as well. But today, in today's version of Where Are They Now, what happened to Jack Wiltshire?
Excellent question. I have genuinely no idea. Last I heard, he was with Bournemouth, maybe West Ham.
Yeah, and apparently he's on by mutual agreement, I guess. He left West Ham like a couple months ago. Like, we're not talking like he was just let go. They didn't think he was doing very well. He just left a couple months ago. I guess he's just been writing out some stay-at-home orders or whatever it may be. But, you know, one of the youngest debutants in English football history is now without a club. But he does still believe that he can play at a top-level English club. So my question to you guys, what club would that be? Who would pick him up?
I wonder how many appearances in the Prem he's had this season up to the point when he was let go. If he was like not featuring at all, or if he was just like, he was featuring, that'd be even more interesting if he was featuring and mutually.
He appeared 8 times in the 2019-2020 season. So no times this season.
Where does he go next? What's next for Jack Wiltshire? How old is that guy?
He's
20,
is,
I'm guessing like
28. So a little on the older side, but definitely somebody that has a little bit of experience.
I was just coming into his prime.
Yeah. This 28 is like your like
world class,
like right around the honestly. But to answer your question, I don't know. I think a spell in the championship would be nice. But I just don't know if the Prem, he's got too much of a reputation in the Prem of being like maybe too fragile for like that level. Maybe if he took it down a little bit, maybe buddy up with Wayne Rooney at Derby or something like that. I don't know.
I was going to say, I don't think he, I don't think he's that fallen off. So from what I read up on it, I did see that basically the mutual agreement was basically Jack Wiltshire feels like he's a big club player and that he wasn't getting the big club treatment at one of, you know, a smaller team. He's used to it. I could see him being an answer for someone like Arsenal. I bet they could get him cheap. He's a good player when he's in form. When he's in form, he's phenomenal. He world is.
Class. Yeah, but that happens never. It's so.
Not
it's
world
so
class, Alex. Calm down. But I do think he's up there, and he is in form until he gets a knock. The question is he being healthy outside of the pitch, right? Like, is he taking care of himself? And if he is, he's great. The problem is, all too often, he's on crutches. He would do well, I think, going overseas to like an Italy or a Portugal that have a pretty good league that's still in a Europe kind of contention kind of position, but not quite the same pressures of being at home. I do still think he's got the potential, but what a random way to go out. Like, he was the next big thing for England. They expected him to go places and he is currently unemployed.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what do you think of him going to, yeah. What if you go down to just Norwich City? I mean, sitting top of the championship, somebody that does get back into the Prem every once in a while, you know, is that sort of where he's supposed to land?
Maybe. But I also see Ben's point. I also see Ben's point in being like playing for like more maybe a top team abroad, a little bit less physicality of a league. Maybe that would suit him. Because I mean, there's less knocks there. There's definitely an aggressive league for sure.
There's more.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I honestly probably favor more of an international move for Jack Wiltshire than maybe stepping down to the championship. I think that would help him get some playing time, maintain some period of fitness. I think that could be a springboard. Now it just kind of goes to where abroad does he go? I don't know if I have the answer for that. You said Italy or Portugal. I don't really know, but I think I would say that that's probably the move if I had to decide that man's future. If I was his agent, I'd be like, hey, let's go.
Would you take him if you're in Newcastle, Alex?
No. I was just going to suggest that he goes to Albion Rovers. I think it's a solid spot for him to land. I heard there's some new investment coming in, and the only way is up for them, really. So
those winnings wages, he'll new signing announcement.
Yeah. I mean, currently he's making nothing. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, right. Good point. It's a good point.
I'll call his people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a great way to end this podcast with a little Christmas pitch for Jack Wilshere to come join Albion Rovers. Everybody, we've got a lot of Boxing Day football coming up. It's always a great time of year. And there's definitely going to be a couple upsets. Hopefully all three of ours work out again. And Ben can win some new some baby money. So, Ben, good luck. Steve, good luck to you as well. And for all of you out there, good luck. And we'll be back next week with a special episode.
Yeah, we'll see you next week, folks. Have a great Christmas. Happy holidays. Whatever you're celebrating, enjoy. Be safe. Be merry.
See you. Ricky Ricardo. Ricky Ricardo.